Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, April 24th. Yesterday, New York State released the results of its first coronavirus antibody survey. Antibodies indicate you have had the virus, whether or not you ever felt symptoms, and that you might be immune. In New York City, 21% of people sampled tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies, 21%. It was around 17% positive on Long Island, around 12% in Westchester and Rockland, and less than 4% in the rest of the state. The results come from random blood testing of about 3,000 people, including 1,300 in the city, at grocery and big box stores over the course of 2 days. So what does this mean for understanding the virus and for getting New York eventually back toward normal? With me now, Apoorva Mandavilli, science journalist, frequent contributor to the New York Times, about to be full-time there, I understand, and the 2019 winner of the Victor Cohn Prize for Excellence in Medical Reporting. Thanks for doing this, Apoorva. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
And congratulations on being hired by the Times. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's right. I'll be starting there on May 18th.
That's great. And well-deserved from my reading of your reporting. Is a 21% positive rate in the city a lot, a little? What does that number mean?
Well, so the number is high, and I think higher than most experts would have expected. It's not entirely surprising because New York, as you know, we've been really, really hardly hit by the virus. So I think New York City probably does have a high percentage, but I don't know if 21.2 is exactly going to be right. A lot depends on the quality of the tests they used, which from everything I've heard is pretty good. But I just want to remind all the listeners that we don't actually have a study in hand for scientists to be able to look carefully and say, how good was this analysis? How good was the study design? We're simply going by numbers that they just offered up yesterday.
A virus scientist named Florian Kramer tweeted yesterday, I think this is too high. It is possible, but a 20% plus infection rate seems too high for New York City due to a number of reasons. I would think 6 to 8%, maybe 10% are closer to the truth. He points out that there was a similar survey in L.A. last week that found only 4%. He writes, it would be nice to know more about the test, its sensitivity and specificity and the test population, and people push back against him too. But you know, what do you make about that 21% of that 21% number based on the sample? I guess if it was people who were tested as they were going in or out of grocery stores and big box stores, that would exclude people who are homesick with the virus. That would also exclude people who are in vulnerable groups, like very elderly people who might not be going out at all.
And it would exclude kids, teenagers, people who don't normally go out into grocery stores. And there's also the element that they asked people to volunteer. So the people who probably already felt sick and thought they had the coronavirus are more likely to want to be tested to see, you know, out of curiosity to see if they do have the antibodies. So there is a lot of selection bias with the way that they did this. There are a lot of questions about how representative is this sample really. But I do want to say that this is the kind of study that can be done. I mean, it's really hard to get a truly randomized sample to truly understand every, you know, unless you go door to door, which is really not feasible. They have to find some way of doing that. And I think they did the best they could to try to get a representative sample. It's just that when we look at the numbers, we have to take all those factors into account. So I agree with Dr. Kramer. He's fantastic and very knowledgeable. And I agree with Dr. Kramer that we need to know a lot more about the specifics of the test that they used. I will say that the lab that developed the test, the Wadsworth Public Health Lab, is very well regarded. They used a test that is very well regarded. It's not one of the rapid tests that we've been hearing a lot about that say, yes, no, you have antibodies, you don't have antibodies. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that have created a lot of problems. This is a little bit more rigorous. It's more believable. but they do still have a false positive rate, meaning they do still say that people who don't have antibodies do have antibodies. So they pick up on a signal that isn't actually there. That rate is quite small for this test. It's better than a lot of other tests out there. It's about 2-3%, they say, because they set a very high bar for what they consider a positive. So they tried to be very careful and only look at people who seem like they have a very strong signal. So they did a lot of things right. And so I'm inclined to believe that New York City does have a higher percentage. It's just a matter of whether it's close to 21%. It might not be quite so high.
Mm-hmm.
And so, before we make decisions.
How much do antibodies equal actual immunity that would really allow those people to go back to work and also to interact with vulnerable people?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, and we do not have the answer to that. I think there's reason to believe that if you have antibodies, and this test is looking at a particular kind of antibody that does usually signal some kind of long-term immunity, it's called IgG, if you have those antibodies, there's good reason to hope that you are probably immune for some period of time, but we're just not sure. We need to know a lot more about how much you need to be immune, how much of that antibody you need, something called a titer. You need to know how much of that to be protected from reinfection. You need to know how long those antibodies stick around, and we don't really have those answers yet.
When and how will we know the answer to that?
Weeks to months is, I think, the best estimate that scientists can say.
So weeks to months before we know if people who have had the virus and have the antibodies are safe to go back into public.
Yes, and I want to emphasize that even at that point, it's still some amount of guesswork, because to really know, okay, if you have this antibody, you are protected for a year, you would actually have to observe people for a year and see if they get reinfected. I mean, that is really the best way to find out. And obviously, we don't have that kind of time. So we are going to have to make best guesses at some point, or at least governments will make the decision to take that kind of guess into account. But for real solid answers, we're going to have to actually wait it out.
Wait it out in real time. And I see from CNN Sanjay Gupta, Dr. Gupta, that SARS antibodies, after that epidemic, lasted 2-3 years, and people with MERS had antibody presence for about 3 years. So maybe that's some indication of, once this kicks in, how long it would last. But you're saying you don't even really know if an antibody will give you immunity, even temporarily.
Like I said, I think there's reason to hope that it does. Usually when you have antibodies to a virus, that is what it means. It is a matter of how long that will last. And it's true that with SARS and MERS, it's lasted 2-3 years, but this virus has behaved so differently than those other viruses in so many ways. I mean, one big way is that, you know, we know now that some large proportion of people don't have any symptoms while they're contagious. And that's very different from SARS and MERS. So there are crucial differences between these coronaviruses, and we can't really just assume that because the immunity to SARS lasts 2-3 years, this will too.
Joan in Brooklyn. Joan, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Okay.
All right, so I got tested by some miracle. I think I filed about a month ago when I felt sick. I got tested on Wednesday. I just got the result. It was negative. Problem is, and I would love to do the plasma testing, both Mount Sinai and the blood center say that I have to have a positive test for COVID-19. I can't go get it.
In other words, as somebody who's recovered, you want to donate blood, plasma, so that it can be used as a treatment for people very sick with the virus. Is that
right?
What you're saying, Joan?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Apurva?
This is a huge problem, and this is a problem that has come up because of the lack of enough tests. And unfortunately, they do have to prioritize whom they can test. And I'm really sorry. It sounds like, you know, you want to be helpful, but they do have to set some limits in terms of how many people they can screen, and the lack of a positive test is one of the ways that they can limit the number of people. And hopefully, as more tests become available, people will have positive PCR tests and know that they're infected and know that they can then maybe go donate plasma.
Joan, I hope that helps. Thank you very much. Judy in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I haven't seen an answer to my question anywhere. First of all, I understand we are assuming people who test positive for the antibodies are themselves protected. I know that's an assumption. But nobody has addressed the question, do they still shed any virus? Or could we have a Typhoid Mary type of situation where someone seems perfectly healthy but isn't safe to be around?
Well, we have some answers to that question. We know that people do test positive for a certain amount of time, up to 3 weeks after they first test positive. But that doesn't mean that they're still shedding live virus at that point, because the test detects viral material. And so you might still test positive, but you don't actually have live virus. I think there's fairly good reason to believe, based on not just this virus, but in general, how we understand immunology, that by the time a test can detect the IgG antibodies that I mentioned, you are no longer infectious.
So that would be... Go ahead.
Right. If you get a positive test on an IgG antibody test, that means that you are no longer contagious and you can't pass it on to other people.
Vicki in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Vicki.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for everything all this information you're disseminating. I just wanted to say I'd gotten a notice on my phone to contact a group called One Medical where I could possibly be put on a list for a test. And when I went on the website, it had crashed. So I called, to see if someone could ring me back to set up an appointment. And they had wanted...
And Vicki, let me just clarify. You're talking about an antibody test, not a test to see if you have the virus?
No, a test to see if I had the virus.
Oh. Okay.
Right. And sorry, I guess if this is only directed at antibody, I'm muddying the waters. But what I wanted to say was it seemed to be a marketing tool. And even though they waive a fee to become a member of this One Medical, which is normally a $200 fee, they wanted my credit card information before they would even give me information about a test site. So it just...
Oh, that is really interesting. And even though it is a little off topic, it sounds like a worthwhile thing to alert people if you think things like that are going on out there, Apoorva, if you have any information, and if you think they're scams.
There are so many questionable emails going out right now. I mean, I think you are very... smart to be wary of this. One Medical, I actually am a client, so I think they're mostly legitimate as far as I know. But there are just dozens and dozens of emails that I receive anyway from all kinds of companies claiming to have antibody tests that will tell you whether you have the virus, which is absolutely wrong because antibody tests can't really diagnose. There are emails that claim to tell you with great accuracy and specificity that you are immune. There are all kinds of claims that are simply not supported by the science.
And what about antibody tests? Well, first of all, did they tell the individuals who were tested, these 3,000 individuals in this random sample done by the state, did they tell the individuals who were tested their results?
You know, I'm not sure. I believe they have, but don't take my word for it. I'm not sure if they individually contacted each person and told them the results.
Because I'm thinking, for one thing, of the previous caller who wants to donate blood now that she's been recovered, those people would be excellent candidates to be asked to volunteer to donate plasma to give to patients who are sick. That's for one thing. Also, just for their information, to know with whatever immunity or confidence level based on, you know, the uncertainties that exist, that they would have to go back into the world, that they would know their individual status. It would be interesting to know if they know. And you know what half the listeners, as well as the host, are thinking at this moment. Can I get an antibody test?
Well, I know that Mount Sinai is doing that. I mean, they screen people with their test, which Florian Kramer's test, by the way, is a two-step, and that's really the gold standard. You want to test once and then test again to make sure that, you know, that you absolutely do have the antibodies. Nobody has time to do that on a, you know, population level. But in that case, they are screening people and then identifying people who can donate plasma. But I would say to anybody who tests positive, you know, you can have some level of confidence that if you had a positive PCR test, you were sick, and now a test is telling you you have antibodies, you might be okay. And even if you do get sick again, let's say, the second time might be milder. But there is still this issue of false positive, and that you might be getting a test result that tells you you have antibodies when you do not. And I know it's a big uncertainty and everybody wants certainty, but that's where we are right now.
If these preliminary antibody test results are true, that in fact one in every five New York City residents tested positive for antibodies to the coronavirus, what does that suggest about the true fatality rate of this disease?
I mean, regardless of exactly what that number is, even if it's not 21.2%, it does suggest that the fatality rate that we've seen in New York City is less than it probably is, that there were a lot of people who were not severely ill. And it brings the fatality down rate, you know, to a level that is more consistent with what other places have observed. So that's some good news. And it also gives us a sense of how many people in the whole state and in the whole city might have been exposed to the virus already. And it gets us a little bit closer to this concept of herd immunity, the point at which we can stop worrying about the virus making its way through the population. So there are some glimmers of good news in these numbers.
We have a few more minutes with Apurva Mandavilli, New York Times science journalist. After the release yesterday of the first antibody sample testing of people in New York State and the interesting results from those, I want to actually ask you about herd immunity, which you brought up. I gather that Sweden is trying a different route than a lot of other countries to dealing with coronavirus, aiming for herd immunity, meaning sort of general population immunity, by staying open. And I see one number, it was a tweet from someone on Dr. Kramer's thread, who we mentioned before. The Swedes claim that 26% of the Stockholm county will have been exposed by May 1st, and they have only 1,000 dead. What is Sweden really doing? And is that some kind of mass suicide, or is it something smarter than that?
I don't think it's anything smarter than that. The UK also discussed this concept at the beginning and then backtracked. The idea is, you know, we just keep everything open and everyone will be exposed and most people will be fine and we won't have to suffer these hits to the economy. But the reality, as we've just been saying, is that even if 0.5 to 1% of people die, that's a lot of deaths. Even if some number of people get severely ill and are, you know, have their internal organs damaged by this disease, that's a lot of collateral damage. I think it's a really foolish idea, and I'm not sure how successful they will be. I think their numbers have already started to rise, and they will quickly realize that it's not a very sustainable solution. In order to have herd immunity, you need to have at least 50% of the population to have been exposed to the virus and be immune, and that's a really big percent to get to, collecting deaths along the way.
What does herd immunity really mean? If it takes only a little more than 50% to reach that status, that might still be 45% of the people who haven't had the virus who could still spread the virus. I don't know if assuming I haven't had the virus, if I would feel comfortable walking around in a city with 50%, 55% immunity, because somebody labels that herd immunity.
That's right. People can still pass it around. The idea of herd immunity is not that the virus will be completely gone right away, but right now, this new coronavirus, we think spreads from each person who's infected to another 2.2 people or two people. And so when you have 50% of the population infected, the idea is that that number would drop and each person would only spread to one other person. And at that number, the virus then starts to die out. It stops finding new hosts to infect and it will disappear. But that's a gradual process. And as you said, you know, if only 50% are infected, the other 50% are still possible victims. And so it's a long-term strategy, but it's not something that is effective immediately.
Let me take one more phone call for you from a healthcare worker, Larry in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Larry, real quick.
Hi. I had the antibody test done just recently, and I got both the MGM, the IgM, and the IgG. I have been infected, I believe, twice already. Can I get infected a third time?
Wait, can he even get infected twice, Apoorva?
Yeah, Larry, I'm not sure that you were infected twice. That sounds like maybe I'm not sure how you know that you were infected twice. Did you get two positive results on a virus test?
I had all of the symptoms early in February, and then on the second one, I had a confirmed patient who was confirmed COVID, and then I got tested by swab, and I also was confirmed COVID, and then recently I just got the IgM and the IgG antibodies, saying that I was obviously infected once with the IgM, and that I'm currently got IgGs going, you know, through my system.
Well, without knowing all of the specifics, it sounds to me like what you had in early February was probably not the coronavirus infection, because the IgM result that you got means that you were infected not that long ago. So it's probably that second time that you're talking about that was the real coronavirus infection. The IgM okay. antibody only lasts for a certain amount of time, and then it disappears. And the IgG is the one that sticks around long term. So either way, you have antibodies, so that's a good thing. And I'm glad that you made it through okay.
I've got a question that's completely off the topic of antibodies. The president's briefing yesterday included a government scientist who said sunlight, heat, and humidity are all effective at killing the virus in the world. In other words, making it harder for you to contract the virus. But then the president confused a lot of people. He got defensive when a reporter asked, why are there many cases in hot, humid places like Florida and New Orleans, if that's the case? So I think that went unanswered and left people confused. I'm curious if you have an understanding as a science writer of that contradiction and what the science about heat, humidity, and sunlight actually is.
So the heat and humidity things I have also heard pieces about, and I think that's basically, you know, based on science about how viruses generally behave in certain conditions of humidity, that they prefer certain levels of humidity. But that does not mean that in hot, humid places, the virus will just die out. And, you know, you pointed out a couple of places in the United States. I would also point out places like Singapore, which have had fairly severe outbreaks. And I think that tells us that this virus is not going away this summer. It's not going away just because we have high humidity for a few weeks.
My guest has been Apoorva Mandavilli, science journalist, frequent contributor to the New York Times, about to go on staff with the New York Times next month. And boy, I sure hope when you're a staff writer for the Times that they still give you enough time to go on radio shows, because you provide so much good information and you explain it so clearly as a good science journalist would do. So we really, really appreciate when you come on with us, and thanks for coming on today.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's my pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast. Under the circumstances in our country right now, we'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at wnyc.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.